Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studio, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports, and joining us now is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, always appreciate our weekly visits with you. Just looking at how the Tennessee Titans have been constructed so far, of course, we still have post-June 1st cuts. Of course, we've got a wave of players that'll hit the waiver wire that the Tennessee Titans can supplement this team. But just looking at how it's constructed now, looking at Mike Clay's breakdown and rankings of all the wide receiver cores in the NFL, the Tennessee Titans coming in dead last, how successful do you think a team can be in this NFL, especially in this AFC, with playing really good defense and running the ball?
You're not a playoff team. So I got how successful. Okay. I mean, best case scenario, you're roughly a 500 team and, you know, hope for some good fortune to make the postseason. I think in general, you know, to have a roster where you think, look, where we can't compete. We can't necessarily go, you know, score for score. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the football. You know, we're going to try not to turn it over. You know, while you can win football games that way, when you look at the landscape of the AFC, I think it's just, you know, to say like, hey, we're going to do that when, look, Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers, you know, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, Patrick Mahomes, like when Justin Herbert, like when that, those are the quarterbacks in your conference that are supported by good, you know, wide receiver groups. I think it's nearly impossible to think you're going to have that kind of success.
And with that in mind, what do you think is a fair expectation for the Titans, at least as currently constructed? Of course, things can change, but what do you think is a fair expectation for this team?
Well, I mean, listen, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, what typically happens in a season, which is, you know, hey, are guys healthy? Are they playing well? What's happening to other teams? Because we know that every year there are injuries. We know that every year, like, you know, somebody doesn't play as well as they did the year before and somebody has a great year. So I would say this. I would think that every team in the AFC South right now feels like, look, we can compete to win our division. I would think that they all feel that way. So, look, the Jaguars are going to feel like they should be the favorite, and they will be, and they will be the team to beat. You know, Houston obviously has a lot of excitement, but it's a young quarterback. Same situation with the Indianapolis Colts. And I think if you're the Titans, you'd say, hey, these two other teams in our division, look, they're probably starting rookie quarterbacks. You know, one of them with very little starting quarterback experience, even at the college level. Like, we have a quarterback that's proved that he can play at a high level. And we feel good about, you know, what we've built here. And so, look, maybe, you know, find a way to kind of edge out Jacksonville, and we can be the representative in the AFC South. I mean, I think that it's realistic to feel that way. It's realistic to think that you can accomplish that. And so, look, I guess to answer your question directly, so what does that mean? Is that when you win your division at, you know, with 9 wins, do you have to get to 10 wins and maybe you make it in that way? Yeah, I think that could happen.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Tim, looking at this, the AFC, because I think if you want to look at the NFC, I think there are still more holes at the quarterback positions in the NFC than there is the AFC. I think the AFC, there may be 3 teams right now that probably don't feel as if they have their franchise quarterback. But It seems like this is sort of the new NFL now, whereas everybody hoped and was trying to get a franchise quarterback, say, 5-10 years ago. And you look at the teams now, just about everybody in their mind believes they have a franchise quarterback in the AFC. How do you, if everything works out, say all these guys are, they have their success, how does the AFC look in, say, another 2 years in your mind? Because now it's no longer, well, we don't have a quarterback. Now it has to be something else that separates, you know, team A from team B and C, because now we all have our quarterbacks. But what is that one thing that you believe separates them other than that quarterback, or eventually will separate them?
Yeah, so I think this. I think defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know you guys experience it because everyone that's in the media experiences it. We just tend to focus so much more on offense. I mean, we naturally do. It's more exciting. It's, you know, we're talking about quarterbacks and receivers and scoring points and all of that. But I guess I would just say it for this reason. You know, the Rams win a Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford led the league in interceptions that year, I believe. So what was the difference? Well, the difference was the defense was a championship caliber defense. You could say a similar thing about, you know, what you saw from Tampa. Like that year Brady was there, that first year, they weren't great at the beginning of the year offensively. Now, obviously, he's an amazing quarterback and all that, but it was the defense because you get to the Super Bowl. And what was the difference? It was Patrick Mahomes was running around, that depleted offensive line, and it was the defense. So I would say what's going to separate all these great quarterbacks, you know, from each other, and which guy's having success and which guy's not, would be what does their team look like on the defensive side of the ball? And closely behind that is going to be, well, how good are they up front on the offensive line? And so I think those are the thing. I mean, just look at, look at Philadelphia this year. It was, you know, it was really a very good defense and an incredible offensive line. So I think those are the things that are going to, when we look up and we're like, hey, why has Burrow had success? Why has Wilson fallen off the map? How come Trevor hasn't gotten it done? Or Justin Herbert, why is he taking that next step? I think a lot of it is going to have to do with everybody but them.
Yeah, and I can see that happening because I look at Josh Allen, and I know many people consider him a elite quarterback. I think he's mm-hmm. a really good quarterback because he still makes too many mistakes, I believe, at crucial times in a game. And it's like, dude, why are you still making these mistakes? Mm-hmm. You're 4 or 5 years now in the league. But it's going to have to be, you know, that defense that separates, you know, team A from team B and C. Because right now, as we look, I mean, you could take just about any one of these quarterbacks and put them on just about any team when you're talking about franchise quarterbacks, and they're going to win. But, you know, winning a championship and winning a lot of games is different. You know, you said it. Tampa wasn't great in the regular season, but during the playoffs, that defense was lights out. And you had you have the best quarterback ever to you know, get underneath center, guiding your team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and listen, I think that, look, I mean, let's just, like, some of the conversations we've had, just go back to last year, even with the Kansas City Chiefs, we were saying, all right, well, like, are they going to be good enough? I mean, the big question, you know, I'm sure people were talking a lot about Tyreek Hill and stuff, but it was more, or what do they look like on defense? Like, are you going to be able to stop anyone? And I'll say this about, you know, Buffalo. Look, they've been so one-dimensional on offense that that's part of the issue. Like, can you run the ball some? I mean, because you do need to have, you know, some type of balance, some situational ability to run the football. Otherwise, it comes back to get you. And, you know, not so much, you know, this year in the postseason, but the previous 2 years in the postseason, you know, that's been something that's really hurt them.
More with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next. It's Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville app. We're talking with ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck now.
All right, Tim, first of all, I feel like you're doing a great job for us. You're not showing any fatigue. We saw you on SportsCenter just before you came on with us, so you got good stamina. You're giving us good minutes here.
Did you like the little argument with Teddy Bruschi about who had the better background? And
I saw him turning around. We couldn't hear what you were saying. We were on the air, but I saw him doing that.
There was a discrepancy over who had the better background because I've copied Teddy with, like, the backlighting on the background. And he was claiming that he had a better background than me. But he actually has a picture of my brother on his background, and I have no picture of my own brother on my back. So, I have too many other good things to have on my shelf, so which means by default I have to be the winner.
Matthew did not make the cut. He's got to have issues with that.
Did not make the cut, but I think is you guys have heard me talk about him before. That's par for our course with me, and I have a sledgehammer on my shelves. D Mace, I think, knows about this. That was from the little youth football team that I coached years back.
Mm-hmm.
These kids signed it. So, like, I mean, that right there, the fact that I've got a local youth football team with their signatures on a sledgehammer on my shelf, like, I just feel like I should get the win right there.
Yeah, that's a special conversation piece. Yeah. That's a good conversation piece. Hey, tell me about the sledgehammer. That's a good, at parties, social gatherings, that gets a good conversation going. The other thing that I wanted to see, too, was the Clinton Portis aquarium. Any artifacts from that? That's one of my favorite stories that you've told. Clint Portis bought the biggest aquarium for his home that you've ever heard of.
Hey, I mean, we can question the use of those funds.
Yes.
The saltwater tank in the house. That's a high upkeep there. Upkeep for sure.
I mean, listen, when the filtration system takes up one bay of your garage, that's usually a big, not a good indication for
that's tough.
So, Tim, I want to ask you this. I read a really interesting discussion on The Athletic, and it was up and coming, like just looking at how the quarterbacks get evaluated now. We just went through months of just picking apart everything about Will Levis and all these other guys. The question came up, like, if you're an up-and-coming five-star recruit, and you can pick where you're going to go, knowing how you got NIL now, you've got teams that are perennially in the national championship picture, but they probably have a lot of different quarterbacks that are you're competing with. How you would prioritize, development if you someday dream about playing in the NFL? How if you were advising a guy that's got all those tools, he can probably go a lot of different places, how would you advise him to prioritize those things?
Well, listen, this is an actual example of conversation that I have had recently with a number of dads of kids that are either now in college or soon to be in college about, okay, what do I do? I've had this conversation with a number of them, and some guys have gone to play in the SEC, some guys have gone to play in other conferences. Some guys will have the opportunity to go play in a bunch of different Power Five conferences. And my advice is this, because I think it has changed a lot. And I think you bring up a great point about, it probably used to be, hey, you're a kid that's playing quarterback and maybe Steve Spurrier and the Florida Gators come calling. And like, you're going to go there because that kid's going to put up a bunch of numbers. You're going to get a chance to play in the NFL or Notre Dame or whoever the school might be. And I think now what you have to really consider are a couple factors. One, what is your path to play? Like, what does it look like once you step on campus and the clock is turning? What is your path to get on the field? And so a lot of that has to do with the guys in front of you. But then also, are you a guy that you're going to be there? You're going to, a kid a little older than you is going to play. And then as soon as he leaves, here comes somebody from the transfer portal that the school is giving NIL money to, or the program is getting NIL money for, and now all of a sudden he just jumps you, whether he's a better player than you or not. I think you've got to be very careful about those types of scenarios. I mean, I brought up Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a good example of that. Tyler Buckner's probably sitting there thinking, look, I'm going to have a shot to play and be the Notre Dame starting quarterback. And next thing you know, here comes Sam Hartman from Wake Forest. So I think that all that stuff matters. Now, the elite of the elite, the Cade Klubnik's going to go to, go to Clemson. He has a great career, probably find himself being a high draft pick. But, or Drake May, for that matter, at North Carolina. But, take the Klubnik example. DJ Uiagalelei thought that would be him. And the minute, you have a couple bad games, They're looking for the guy to replace you, and that isn't the case at every program.
Another question that came up in this discussion was the offensive system. Does a system like a Baylor or a Tennessee with the spread inhibit a quarterback's development trying to become a, quote, pro quarterback?
Yeah, I think there was a period in time where it really did, because you would look at it and say, man, there's a lot of a lot of throws right at the line of scrimmage. And there's a lot of throws that, like, or when I watch you play, it's hard for me to figure out, you know, does this translate to the National Football League? I think the more and more we continue to see Saturday offenses on Sunday, that's not as big of a factor. It just isn't. And so, you know, the days of saying, hey, we got to see this guy. I remember it happened with Sam Bradford. Like, well, we never saw him playing under center at Oklahoma. Like, how does that translate? I think people are less and less worried about that, and we've seen people kind of navigate that successfully. I mean, Justin Herbert's a good example. It was an offense that you could see very little carryover between Saturday to Sunday, but, he proved that he's just a good enough, talented enough athlete who's willing to work on it, that that's not a problem.
Now, do you, Tim, and I'm listening to you answer this, and the question Willie asked about the quarterbacks, and in my mind, I'm just thinking, like, man, you know, that just sounds like, you know, these individuals, these young men, it just gets harder and harder for them. You know, like when we were coming out of high school, you know, it was hard, but, you know, it's not like there wasn't a lot of competition, but it was like, okay, this is the school we want to go to. They're giving us a scholarship. We're going to go there. And we're going to, you know, grind it out for a year, maybe 2 years, and then ultimately get into a position where we can now display our talent. It's like it's like now it's so hard because every year it's free agency. And I'm not talking free agency with kids coming out of high school. I'm talking about free agency with all these kids in a portal. And, you know, some kids get left in a portal. And it just seems like it's gotten so much harder for these young men to, you know, one, get into college and stay there. And then once they transfer or try to transfer somewhere else, now they got to try to fit into whatever, you know, situation they're going into.
Yeah. And listen, and change and transferring and learning a new offense, that's just hard. Look, I'd say this, take Bo Nix as a good example. Okay. Bo Nix probably grew up wanting to play at Auburn because of where he grew up and his father's history at the school. Well, he goes and he plays early. He's a super talented kid. He goes and plays early. Has a couple bad games, a couple bad decisions, turning to bad turnovers, and he gets run out of town. He's not playing at Oregon. Now, listen, the NFL draft's going to come around, and Bo Nix, because he was able to find a home, you know, find a landing spot to go play, like, Bo Nix is going to hear his name called fairly early. But, like, think of this scenario where Bo Nix, you know, ended up really and had to leave the program that he grew up and was good enough to play at. That's, I mean, look, I'll give you another one so the listeners can, you know, be someone that they're aware of. Hendon Hooker, I've said this to you guys. I called his games at Virginia Tech. He came out of training camp, his last year at Virginia Tech, he came out of training camp and they had already decided that he was going to split time. You know, so, you know, it because they had a transfer that they really liked, they liked the skill set. And so, yeah, there's going to become a time where going to a smaller school, a school, academically is one that it's difficult to transfer into, is going to start to benefit, you know, some of these young quarterbacks.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst. On the subject of SEC quarterbacks, Hendon Hooker, formerly Bo Nix at Auburn, looking at Anthony Richardson, And, you know, throughout the entire draft process, all the talk that we have heard and just watching Anthony Richardson myself, it was, you know, he's not quite ready yet. He's only started in 13 games. He's not ready yet, but the potential is just, you know, off the charts. That's exactly why he was a top five pick. And then Jim Irsay comes out and says that he wants Anthony Richardson to start at some point this season. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that? And do you think that's really, just from your evaluation of Anthony Richardson, the best thing for him and the best thing for the Indianapolis Colts?
I do think it's the best thing for him to play, because I think he needs to play. And I experienced it as a player where it's really hard to get better when you're not playing. And so my 2 years at the New York Giants with Eli Manning as a starter, he was a young player that you know, they wanted him to get as many snaps as possible. I played 7 snaps in the regular season in 2 years. It's hard. It's hard to get better when you're not playing. And so, you know, I just think that's how you get better. And, you know, this notion of, hey, we don't want to ruin a guy's confidence, we don't want to do that. While I understand the conversation, a lot of people want to point to David Carr and say, like, hey, he got ruined because he got hit so many times, and, you know, they should have rested, you know, or they should have sat him early. Like, I don't subscribe to that, because I think this, if you are going to be drafted in the first round, you're going to play the quarterback position. Like, I got news for you. You're going to face adversity, plain and simple. Like, that's how it works. And if you can't handle the adversity, then you shouldn't be, you're not the guy anyway. And so I just think you need to play. And I get that, you know, people will say, hey, Patrick Mahomes didn't play his first year. Well, he did start a game his first year. He did play a lot of football in college, and he was really well coached throughout that entire process. So, you know, that to me, you know, that's more the outlier than the scenario where, like, look at Trey Lance. Like, Trey Lance has played almost no football. Like, it just, between, you know, a COVID year, 1 year as a starter in college, playing one game during the COVID season, because of injury, not playing games. Like, I don't know how you get better if you're not playing. And look, you can apply that principle to a lot of different things. I mean, everything from, you know, hosting a radio show to being a kid getting at bats to, I mean, like, you name it. Like, you need to do it to improve at it. And I think that because of that, I would play Anthony Richardson.
Very interesting perspective. Thank you, Tim Hasselbeck. Appreciate you as always. We'll chat with you next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.
Awesome. Yep. Thanks, Tim. Very interesting perspective from Tim Hasselbeck, mm-hmm. because we do hear the don't rush the young guy. You don't want to ruin him. So how do we approach, you know, with that philosophy, how do we approach that with Will Levis and how the Tennessee Titans will proceed with Will Levis? Let's get into that coming up next. And your thoughts as well, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
The efficiency of the passing game in his career, he's not always been the most accurate guy, and he doesn't always seem to have made the best decisions. How does that translate here into the coaching that you need to do and into the efficient play that you're looking for?
Well, when you look at completion percentage, 65% 2 years in the SEC, what we felt like was over 30 drops that probably would have led to, you know, closer to 70% completion. Every player that we bring in here is going to have a chance to improve, and will have to improve. And again, the decision-making, toughness, accuracy are obviously things that we feel are critical with quarterbacks, and we think that the three that we have here are going to be able to do that.
That was Mike Vrabel on draft night 2 after the Titans traded up to select quarterback Will Levis. And look, it's no mystery that Will Levis struggled this past season at Kentucky. Mike Vrabel even said it. His 2021 campaign was much different and much more successful than it was in 2022. Will Levis, 19 touchdowns and 10 interceptions this past season at Kentucky. And so the big discussion has been, what is best for this team, the Tennessee Titans, this season and in the future? What's best for Will Levis, both this season and in the future? And Tim Hasselbeck said, hey, you're not going to get better if you don't play, because there's kind of two philosophies with young quarterbacks. You bring them in, you let them sit You know, the Patrick Mahomes path. Alex Smith was the starting quarterback in 2017, even though the Chiefs traded up to take Patrick Mahomes in the first round. Patrick Mahomes takes over as the starter the next year, and of course, the rest is history. Or you can you bring in the rookie quarterback. They start right away. Joe Burrow did it. Trevor Lawrence did it. Russell Wilson did it. You know, Aaron Rodgers is the good example of sitting before starting. So that's kind of the question is, do you bring the guy in right away and you just throw him to the wolves and say, hey, figure it out? Because I could say, well, you know, you could totally ruin his confidence. You could go out there and just absolutely stink it up. The fan base has a poor impression of that quarterback. Or, you know, you sit him on the bench and they're not exposed to some of the, you know, the vitriol that you would, of course, get from the fan base or from, you know, the media if they do not perform well. But they also don't get those valuable in-game reps and that valuable in-game experience. So just based off of what we heard from Tim Hasselbeck, it's an interesting philosophy of he is saying start the young guy as soon as he can so they can get those reps. How should the Tennessee Titans move forward with Will Levis?
Well, I mean, to me, and I've said this before, out of the quarterbacks that were drafted, the top four, I think Will Levis is more ready to play than any one of those quarterbacks. And not necessarily because I believe he's had more time underneath center than all of those quarterbacks.
Played more of the, quote, pro-style exactly, offense.
Or that he's better than any one of those top four quarterbacks. But because of the system he came from, he's a little bit older than these guys that he got drafted before, that they get drafted before them. He transferred from one school, had to come from a next, so he sort of, the adversity is there where he overcame it. And even the adversity of last season, not having all those weapons that he had the prior season, and he sort of had to grow up even faster. He had to become a leader even more to a bunch of younger individuals.
Yeah.
So with Will Levis, to me, I'm not going to waver. If it's close, you start him, because a lot of this is predicated on what's around you. Whether you start that quarterback now or you start that quarterback the next following year, if you don't have the personnel around him, he's going to struggle no matter what. If he set a year and then play, or if he played right away, he's going to struggle. Why? Because the offense doesn't have enough playmakers, enough guys that can help take the load off of his shoulder. I think Will Levis is in a perfect position, just like Richardson is in a perfect position. Why? Because these two teams are sort of built the same. Really good defense, really good running game. Our offensive line is getting better here, we hope. The offensive line in Indy is a good offensive line. So I don't have to tell Richardson or Levis, you go out and win the game. It's on you. If we win or lose, it's because of you. No. It's not because of you. It's because of you. It's because of the people around you. It's because you are, you know, you are allowing the team that we've built to help carry you through this, or help carry you through your rookie season. Turn the ball around and hand it to Derrick Henry. Play action and find the open guy. We're not giving you a five-man route. We're giving you essentially a two-man route. Turn around, fake it to Derrick Henry. Those safeties are going to come up. I mean, those backers are going to come up. There's going to be a hole in there. Find that guy. So I'm not putting the franchise on your shoulders yet. But eventually, as you start to play and you start to learn and you start to mature in this game and you start to get that experience, evidently that the pressure of, not necessarily the pressure, but the thought of now you can carry the weight of the offense. Now it's there. Now I can say, Will Levis, we need you to lead us on this 2-minute drive to score. And Will Levis can say, you know what? Now that I got the experience, I can do it now. Because now they're relying on me. A year ago, they didn't rely on me, even though I was the starter. My thing was, and I always go back to Ben Roethlisberger, his thing was turn the ball around and hand it to Willie Parker or Jerome Bettis. Let them do their job. Just don't turn the ball over.
Right.
And that's how you win. So it can be done. Will Levis can be the starter this year. I don't understand this, you know, wait for a year, let him start. No. If this org, I think this is a perfect landing spot for Will Levis because everything is set up around him in a sense of if it's close between he and Ryan Tannehill, you start Will Levis. Start the clock right now. We don't need to wait. He's proven. He damn near beat out the starter. If you want to be honest, if it's close. So why hold him back? I don't understand that. Why hold him back? Allow Tannehill to go somewhere else and continue to play. Start the clock now because we still have Derrick Henry. And he can learn while he's handing the ball off to Derrick Henry and play action passes to Burke and Chigakonkwo and whoever else.
I think I'm hearing you say is what I would say in a general sense is you have the ability for the Titans because of the environment Will Levis comes into to try to put him in a position to succeed whenever that time might be. You don't want to put a guy in a position to fail. That's the fear. I think that's the downside of Anthony Richardson in the whole he just needs to play. Because the theory I hear a lot is, well, he hasn't played a lot, so he needs to play. So the ideal thing would be what? You put him in the minor leagues. In other sports, that's what you could do. This guy needs at-bats. Well, let's put him in single A. He could strike out 100 times. Derek Jeter famously made 50-something errors, 50-something, at shortstop his first year of professional ball out of high school. And he was like, what the heck? You know, but they allowed him. He could fail there, and it didn't matter. And he got better and better and better, and he moved up fast. You don't have that option in football. So you have to develop behind the scenes, which, as Tim pointed out, is very difficult, right? Tim said he played 7 snaps in 2 years. Hard to get better when you're not in a game. So how do you get better? Well, you do have to try to put a guy in when he's ready to come in. We saw with Malik Willis. I just don't think he was ready to come in.
Yeah,
he wasn't ready to come in and succeed. So where will Anthony Richardson be? That's what they have to determine. But it sounds to me like they're so desperate, right? They're just going to throw him out in the deep end and say, let's see if you can make it. And that could work really well. He could learn on the fly, make a lot of mistakes, and then get through it, as many people have. Like Peyton Manning was not very good his first year, threw a ton of interceptions, but figured it out, right? The best probably will figure it out at some point. But I like the options, right, where you can have Will Levis earn the job. If he earns it, great, like you said. Great problem to have. But if he hasn't earned it, you don't have to put him in there yet. You have Ryan Tannehill.
And I think that's why the Titans are in such a good position. And I think that, you know, looking at the two schools of thought, the two philosophies of young quarterbacks, throw him in there, let him learn, and then move on from there, and he'll be better off because of it, versus let him sit. Don't force him into uncomfortable situations. I think the Titans can kind of straddle the two of them. I think that they can do both this upcoming season, and we'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Well, I know you changed OCs, but did the system essentially carry over from 21 to 22?
It was a little different. We changed up some different things. We majored in different things in terms of like kind of what run concepts that we or run schemes that we succeeded with more. We went from kind of like a term-based system to a number-based system in the run game, and then, you know, the protection game, our protection rules changed a little bit. We tried to keep some of the concepts as similar as possible, but some did change. But I'd have to say it was about 50-50, but different, but the same at the same time.
That was Will Levis on the system change from 2021 to 2022. Again, it is no surprise, it is no secret that Will Levis's 2022 season did not look as good as his season in 2021. And there are several reasons for that. Offensive line, change of offensive coordinator, turnover of wide receivers. Several reasons and several things that you can point to why Will Levis looked not as good in 2022 that he did in 2021. Now, that begs the question, what can he do in the league? What can he do at the next level? Tim Hasselbeck belongs to the school of thought that you put the quarterback out there. You let him learn. Throw him to the wolves, and then he'll be better off because of it. And we've seen a lot of successful quarterbacks in the league that did start their first season, that started their rookie season, didn't look very good their rookie season, And then they learned from it. Peyton Manning being one of them. Joe Burrow in his first season. He got ended up getting hurt at the end of his first season, but he didn't look very good in his first season as a starter. And then second year got to the Super Bowl. Third year got to the AFC Championship. So I think that the Titans at least are in a position, a very privileged position, where they can do both. They can kind of subscribe to both schools of thought, where Will Levis does not have to be the starter year one, but he can go in games and gain valuable experience where he doesn't have to be the fallback guy. Ryan Tannehill can be that. He has been that. He can be your starter. He can be the guy that you trust when the game's on the line and the clock is winding down. Ryan Tannehill can go out and win you games if need be. But Will Levis can also go in and gain that valuable experience that Tim says is necessary for the evolution of a quarterback. The question is, how many opportunities will Will Levis really have to be able to go out there and be able to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes without putting games on the line, without hurting the team?
This comes back to my central question that I ask you guys almost every day when we get into our football discussion. Mm-hmm. Here we are on May the 10th or whatever. May 9th? May 10th.
May 9th.
Let's not cheat May 9th.
Yeah.
Tomorrow will be May 10th. I don't want to skip a day. Let's have a good May 9th.
May the 9th be with you.
That's right. We missed all that. I'm a Star Wars nerd. We didn't do a May the 4th kind of thing the way we should have. But that's water under the bridge. But how much are you playing for this year? And how much are you playing for the next 2 to 3 years? Mm-hmm. To me, that is the central question for the Titans, where they are with their roster, the way it is situated, with contracts, with cap space, with draft capital, with where the AFC sits. If you're playing more for next year, then I think your theory, Derek, of if it's close, and let's get the kid in there, that's a long-term type of play. If you feel like you can have a really good year, if everything falls right, and if you consider a good year making the playoffs, which I do, I think that's a good year. You don't have to win the Super Bowl to have a good year. I do not subscribe to the George Steinbrenner, either you win the Super Bowl or you stink.
Right.
Right? That's kind of what...
last.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that kind of look at it that way. If you're not first, you're last. We had that funny line. I mean, some people do really think that way. You're not going to have a lot of fun years if that's what you consider a good year. Like, to me... What is your potential? Do you reach your potential? Do you have some fun memories on the way? Do you get everything out of your group? That could happen this year. I don't think anybody thought they were going to the AFC Championship game in 2019, but things fell right. They got on a run. These kind of things can happen. We're seeing it in the NHL playoffs, right? There's some special things developing. Seattle, Florida, you could have teams in the wild card all of a sudden find themselves with a chance to win it, like the 2017 Predators. So I do think that you want to do both. You want to balance both. You have to be realistic on what your team is. But I think that is going to dictate who plays quarterback, right? If you're going for your best shot to win in 2023, it will be with Tannehill, I believe.
Well, I mean, maybe. Maybe not. Maybe.
That'd be a great problem if it's really, really that close at this stage of Will Levis' career. Then you would have stumbled upon a really good player if he's already as good as Tannehill.
You know, if this kid comes in here, again, he's a little older than everybody else. So that's a plus for him, a little bit more mature. Maybe not taking those bathroom selfies, but other than that, we would think he's a mature young individual.
We've all gone through a phase.
Yeah, we've all gone through our phase. We've all done it, some more than others. But if I don't... I'm trying to figure out the benefit in today's football because it's instant gratification with any and everything. And when I mean by instant gratification, I'm not necessarily saying, okay, I'm starting to do something now and I want to see the end right now. No, instant gratification to me in this respect is if this kid has shown the ability to play this quarterback position at this level from what you've seen, say, through camp and through preseason. And if it's close with he and Ryan Tannehill, then let's do it. Let's see where this goes. Let's try to get that instant gratification. Why? Because he's shown us that he's good enough to play right now. It's not like I'm taking a guy that has no skill and, you know, that hasn't shown much, and I'm throwing him out there because he's 6'5" and he has a strong arm. So I just want to see it now and him materialize. He's gonna be great. No, it's this guy's a 6'5", strong arm. And he's shown in practice and in training camp and everything else that he's getting it. Like, he's picking it up the way, even more than what we thought that he would. And it's close. Yes, we can go with the veteran, and nobody will say anything, more than likely. Why? Because the veteran is a good player. But this young kid has shown that, you know, he can play. So why not start the clock on him right now? Why do I have to wait? I want to see what this kid can do. He's shown everybody in the building that he's ready. So all of a sudden, we're supposed to hold him back as an organization. Why? Because there has been instances of guys being held back a year, and then they come the next following year and they're good enough and they're ready to go. Who's to say they wasn't ready the first year? The team just chose to hold them back.
That is kind of tough, because for every example of a quarterback starting and turning out, you have another example of quarterbacks not starting year one and being very good. Mm-hmm. You know, like Patrick Mahomes sitting year one, I don't think is the reason why he became Patrick Mahomes. Probably didn't hurt, but I think Patrick Mahomes would have become what he is now, whether he sat or not. And that's easy of me to say, because we're never going to know.
Well, Jalen Hurts played a lot his rookie year. Lamar Jackson played a lot his rookie year.
Wasn't the starter.
It was that experience they were gaining in those situations they were put in. They were getting used to being in that setting. You know, they were getting used to that. They were getting used to being uncomfortable. And they became comfortable in that situation. If I don't start this kid and he's shown that he can play, and I just want to hold him back because the incumbent is good and he's being himself, and I wait, now that incumbent is gone the next following year, now I got to throw this kid in here. Well, I could have threw him in last year, and he could have gained all the experience in the world, you know, and we still would have been the same team. This Tennessee Titans, I promise you people, if Will Levis shows that he can play in this league, this team will be the same team with or without Ryan Tannehill. They will be.
It's also making the assumption that Will Levis can get to that point, or is at that point at least. Not saying he's not.
No, I'm not. I'm saying there, if he's showing everyone that I'm ready, I'm showing everybody that I'm ready. It's like, okay, well, why are you holding him back then if he's ready?
And I do think, like, the Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts rookie season, the way that the Eagles and the Ravens handled their rookie seasons respectively, I think could be something that is beneficial to Will Levis. Jalen Hurts nor Lamar Jackson were the starters year one. But they got to go into games and contribute and play and make those mistakes and learn from those mistakes and get in-game experience that you simply cannot recreate artificially on a practice field. You just can't. You know, getting those in-game reps, having, you know, a 250-pound edge rusher coming for your head are things that you need to get used to and things that you're not going to experience anywhere else. So Will Levis needs to gain that experience if he is indeed going to be the quarterback of the future and going to be the go-to guy no later than 2024. But not putting all of the pressure in the world on him of being that starting quarterback, of being the only guy, I think is helpful and conducive to a young quarterback.
Let's take the Texans. Do we think real quick that there's any scenario where they just let Davis Mills play for a while until they feel like Stroud is ready? Or do you think it's automatic that, hey, you just pick Stroud with the second pick?
He's playing.
He's in there.
He's
Day
playing.
One?
He's playing.
Day one no matter what.
Again, if he shows anything.
If it's at all close.
He will be playing day one. Why hold him back? I don't get it. Why hold the pressure?
Well, I mean, there's an argument why, but I see what you're saying. Like that's what most teams do these days.
The pressure is going
that's why
to
it's
be
different
there.
Being a second round pick than a first round pick.
No, I think it is. Not really.
I think it is
because here's the deal. Whether you are a first round pick or a third or fourth round pick, I'm going to tell you the rest when we come back from break.
Well, we got Corb.
Chat with Tim Corbin.
We'll come back.
Yeah, talk to Corbin.
Now, we're really leaving people in suspense.
Yeah, you're going to want to hear this one.
Leave the people on their toes, D-Maze. Yeah. So we'll have D-Maze's zinger plus Vanderbilt head baseball coach Tim Corbin coming up next. Caroline Relay, D-Maze, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.